Hi everyone, welcome back to 442. And today, Liam?
Guess what, John? We've got another belter. We've got big, bad Mixu Patalainen, formerly of Dundee United, Aberdeen, Bolton Wanderers, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Hibernian, Strasbourg, St. Johnson, St. Mary, Codonbeath. 70 caps for Finland. He's managed Codonbeath, Hibernian, Kilmarnock, Finland national team, Dundee United, Ubon in Thailand, Latvia and Hong Kong.
That is a career, isn't it?
Long list.
Have I missed anything out?
Only five.
Just the five, Mixer.
Getting better then.
Let me take you back then. Right at the start, 1987, they moved into Dundee United. £100,000. How did it come about?
It was due to my father's business contacts. My father had some business meetings here in Scotland, in Dundee. And then the counterpart, the Scottish counterpart, was a Dundee United director at the time. So then they started, surprise, surprise, they started talking about football after business talks. And the Dundee United director, I can't remember his name now, I'm sorry, but he said that, well, my father had mentioned that I played for the Finnish Olympic team at the time. So why doesn't your son not come here and train with the team for a month and see what the professional football is like? Because those days in Finland, it was all amateur stuff. Right. There was no professional football. So I came here, and brilliant. I had a stukki on my hand. I had broken one of the matches in Finland. I had broken my one of my bones in my wrist. So I had a stukki, and you remember my playing style. You know, it wasn't pretty. So I used that in good effect. And Jim McLean must have liked that because after 1 week he offered me a contract and then I stayed nearly 5 years at Dundee United.
So the 5 years at Dundee United, when you first come in, did you speak good English?
My English was okay, and I was able to speak and understood and all that. I'd been the USA exchange student program and language courses when I was 13 in Torquay and down south in England. So it was okay, but coming to Scotland was a shock to the system. I remember going to the decks after training, and the boys started talking. You know, especially the Glaswegians, everything. You know, didn't understand the word. And then thankfully, him is French, coming from north of Scotland, from the Highlands, and he spoke clear English. I was like, "Nah, I understand you." So thankfully, he was my roommate. And a funny story was that very, very early my days at Dundee United, we played Dundee Derby at Dens Park. And we lost the game. So Jim McLean went wild, you know, as he did, you know, every time we won. And most of the times we won as well and lost. So he went one by one, the players, as usual. Yeah, bastard, yeah. Blah, 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 you know. And then he comes to me. I understood three words. He was shouting like mad. My honeymoon was over, obviously. He was shouting like mad. The foam was coming, you know, from the mouth, and it was like, yeah. I understood three words. Finnish, fucking Finnish bastard. Three words I understood. Everything else went like that. And I was like that. Every time he had a little pause, I looked at him in the eyes, as you do, as a good player. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. And every time I said yes, boss, he shouted even louder. He got more angry. I said, how do I get out of this? I'm agreeing with him. I'm respecting him and all that. And every time he goes more mental. So then eventually he must have gone like, you useless bugger, and went to the next player. And I was like, oh, thankfully. Then in the showers, the boys came to me like, Mixu, did you understand a word what the manager was telling you? I said, no, only those three words. Fucking Finnish bastard. So he said, you were so fucking bad today. Did you go to the boozer last night? Yes, boss. Yes, boss. So he must have thought I was sarcastic, but I didn't understand a word. Hey, boozer was not taught at school in Finland. So it was funny.
Did you go back and tell him I wasn't in the boozer, or did you just let it go?
No, I just let it go. Because come the next match, you know, you got the same battle load again. So
proper hairdryer treatment.
Absolutely. Those were the proper old school management style. Oh. And if you played well, he would skip you. He wouldn't say a word. Well done, you, or something like that. No, he would just skip you. He would just go to the next player. You know. And you're like, oh, I must have done okay then.
So if he didn't bollock you, you played well.
Yes.
Simple as that. No praise.
That was the praise. No words.
Just take you back. So you were playing part-time back home.
Yeah.
And your club received £100,000 for you.
Yeah, well, I was still at school and I had just finished my national service in Finland, army. And 2 weeks after that, I went to Dundee United. So I was used to shouting, you know, at me. So, it was... And people in Finland, actually, they thought that I had backed in football and went to Dundee to study at the university, because at the same time as going to Dundee United, I went to Dundee University to study. So people thought that, oh, he's back to end and he doesn't play football anymore and he's studying there. I was a full-time professional footballer here and then I started luckily scoring goals and the word started to go back to Finland that he's playing there and blah, blah, blah. And then the national team head coach came to watch the games and I was selected and that.
So that £100,000 would have done brilliant for your old club, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. those days it was significant for a Finnish club,
yeah,
especially. But it was good. It was my hometown club, and I had been all the youth ranks with them and all that. So good for them.
How did you find the dressing room straight away? I mean, obviously you said there, Glaswegians like a machine gun and dead quick and everything else. The banter in the dressing rooms, was it an eye opener?
Brilliant. Yeah, loved it.
Yeah,
loved it
straight away.
I've always loved the Scottish humour. I always like that, taking a little bit mickey out of, you know, each other and all that, and that banter. Always loved it. From the first day, loved it. I remember coming the first day to Dundee United dressing room. I had a suit on and a pink tie. I heard afterwards, you know, like half a year later, I heard so much steak. It was unbelievable. Once I started understand Scottish. So, but it was great. The first word... I was corrected with my pronunciations. Guess what it was? It was fucking. Surprise, surprise, coming to Scotland. I said fucking. And I remember guys saying, Mixo, it's fucking. You know, you don't say the G in the end. And that was the language course. And then we had Eamon Bannon in the team, who was a teacher by profession. So he kept me right. Every time I made a grammar mistake or whatever, you know, mix it. No, that like that. Say, you know, it was great. Fantastic. Great years.
Some good players you played with. Darren Jackson, Kevin Gallagher, Martin O'Neill, Billy McKinley, Alan Irvine.
Yeah.
Charlie Adam came through, but Maurice Malpass.
Yes.
Was he like a senior player then?
Our captain, yes. Wonderful fullback. Brilliant. Really, really good. And a good captain, you know, real example and all that. But we had a great team. Obviously, that was the team that I joined in August, but previous May, they had been in UEFA Cup final. So that it tells a story, how good team it was. You know, the Scottish guys, the Paul Hegartys and David Nearys and the rest. Paul Starrocks. It was a great team. It was fantastic. And every position was a international player. You know, it was really, really good.
How were the Dundee Derby for you?
Great. Good memories. Exciting. Fantastic. Obviously, smaller grounds, but as passionate. Brilliant. I was lucky to score a few goals against Dundee and always special. Derbies are always special.
It's special though, just with the grounds where they are next to each other, aren't they?
Unbelievable. We used to go for the premium's meal to Tannadays and walk to Dens Park. You know, from
and that'll take you 1 minute, probably.
That took about 1 minute, 2 minutes. So, you know, it's quite bizarre how big rivalry there is and how close they are, you know, in the same street, same road.
1999, finished fourth, but also club's leading goal scorer, starting to settle in life brilliantly there now, aren't you? Anybody looking for you? Because you're scoring goals now, making a name for yourself.
I don't know. Those days we had no agents. Those days we had no freedom of contract. It was totally different ballgame those days. So you didn't know. Obviously, all the contacts would, if somebody acquired you or whatever, they would go straight to the manager. And the manager would say nothing.
So it's old school, this, isn't it?
Yes, those days.
The manager didn't want to upset the apple cart. They didn't want to
plant
the seed.
And those days. And there was, you didn't know.
No.
Because there was no agents, nothing.
Like saying, we had David Leon and Brian Clough and Nottingham Forest bid for him 3 times.
Yeah.
And his manager just kept quiet.
Yes.
And didn't tell him for 32 years later.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, didn't it?
Well, that was the norm. That's what happened. It was so different those days. But
there would have been interest, but like you said, he wanted to keep you. So he's not going to plant the seed with you. Keeps it himself, doesn't he?
Yeah. I was quite active trying to further my career as well. And then coming to was the end of my contract. I did myself make a few phone calls.
Was that something you do back in the day then, with no agents? You'd have to, like,
help yourself? I don't know. I just thought that I'll do it myself. I'll market myself. But he went, obviously, then. I remember I phoned Terry Butcher, who was a Coventry manager at the time. And I phoned him because I had played against him when he was at Rangers. And all that, and saying that, well, coming in towards the end of my contract, you know, blah, blah, blah. And obviously Terry Butcher then contacted Jim McLean. And then... he must have called Jim McLean saying that this your player, Miksu Partanainen, he phoned me and say that he would be interested in joining you. So Jim McLean, I did hear about it in the office now, and... you go nowhere, you know, you're falling about and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You're trying to get away from me. You're going nowhere, I'm telling you. And it was, those were the days.
Terry Butcher, ex-England, obviously.
Yes, absolutely.
Captain as well.
Yeah.
I mean, at Coventry at that time, were they a championship that time? Coventry.
I can't remember. Yeah, but obviously I had a lot of respect towards Terry Butcher being a, you know, fantastic.
And you've played against him, so he's going to know your
player.
Name.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we had great puzzles and all that, aerial battles and all that, and I used to love them. You know, it was like a...
Oh, you, that was your game, wasn't it?
But, yeah, I loved it. But, no, it was just to further my career and coming down to England and try English football. But then the Aberdeen came in, Willie Miller, for me, and not too long after that. Willie Miller had become Aberdeen manager, and he made some inquiries, and the clubs agreed a fee, and I joined Aberdeen.
Did you feel at that time Aberdeen were a bigger club?
Not necessarily bigger club. I knew the history, obviously, Cup Winners' Cup and all that, Alex Ferguson years, which were not too far from those days, and. And it was great. I thought it was good to join another club. I had been nearly 5 years at Dundee United. Make no mistake, I loved it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Dundee United. You know, we were in Europe every year, basically, cup finals, stuff like that. So it was good. Good spell for me. And so lucky to start my career abroad with a club like that, with the players like that, with a genius manager like that. I know... I'm telling stories about Jim McLean, about his man management, stuff like that. But he was a genius on the training ground. He was absolute genius. He took you by the hand and timings and all that, and the drills and all that, and tremendous. So learned so much footballing-wise from him.
See, before we go on to Aberdeen, if I just quickly take you back, a young Duncan Ferguson.
Yes. Oh. Madman. He broke to the first team from the youth team at Tannadice. And he was confident as any, and he used to come to the first team dressing room. Normally, young boys come, you know, they walk by the walls and all that. He just, you know, I own this place, and fantastic. And on the pitch, then he broke into the playing side as well, and he started producing straight away, put himself about. I played a couple of times up front, 4-4-2 with him, players who like the battle and like
the Bruce Brothers.
Yeah, and like to tussles with the centre half, if you like. And it was enjoyable. But everybody knew that he was a player. Duncan was a player with his technical ability, fantastic. With his finishing skills, with his arrogance, with his confidence. And it was no surprise to anybody that he went on to have a fantastic career.
Do you know, though, I don't think he's ever really got the recognition of how good a player he was. Because everybody seems to concentrate on the physical side of his game. Yeah. Technically, he was different class.
Brilliant. His technical ability was excellent when he played. I know a few Everton supporters, and they always say that Big Duncan, what a player for us he was. Unbelievable.
So, Mixu, £400,000, big price tag. Did you feel the weight of that price tag when you moved to Aberdeen?
No. I just, as always, looking forward to it and trying to make most of it. I remember when I joined Aberdeen, one of the early matches, I had a problem with my foot. It was killing me. I could barely run. I couldn't train every day in the gym, resting it and all that, and then in order to be ready for Saturday. And then after the season, went to investigate what was wrong with it. I had broken the fifth metatarsal. One of the bones was broken, and it was killing me. It was so sore. But you join a new club, and you're eager to do well, and you're eager to blah blah blah. And I just went through the pain barrier and all that.
So you played all season with a broken foot?
No, it wasn't all season. I joined Aberdeen about March time. So the end of the season, if you like, and then it was healed during the summer months, and then ready for the pre-season, and then we had a fantastic season, we really did. We played fantastic at attacking football. Big Duncan Shearer joined the club. What a goal scorer! What a teammate! Great guy, and we had the young players, Ian Chessies and Scott Booths, and. And then we had the experience as well in the team, it was a right balance of youth and experienced players, but the way we played was so attacking. Paul Mason, right winger, was fantastic supplying crosses. I played most of the time left for Aberdeen, and I remember Stuart McKimmy, right back, getting the ball. Theus Nelders, our goalkeeper, and he got the ball. William Miller used to shout, "Hit Mixo!" So he hit this diagonal ball. I came inside, headed it, and the boys were running. And Paul Mason, his trickery and good crossing ability, you know, supplied a few goals for me for the back post. And it was so enjoyable. It was fantastic.
Good really. Dressing room as well, then.
Nice dressing room, very good. But obviously, we were winning. We were in the two cup finals. Unluckily, we lost both of them, but League Cup final and the Scottish Cup final, Rangers won both of them. We were second in the league, Rangers won the league. Rangers won the treble that year. So, but it was a great season. It was enjoyable, and dressing room is always bouncing. You know when you're winning.
You finished second, didn't you?
Yeah,
only by 3 points to Rangers. So it was a good season, wasn't it?
It was a great season.
What was it like, your first experience then playing the Old Firm Rangers in Celtic at their place?
Yeah, obviously, with Dundee United, I had that experience already under my belt. But great. Go there and beat them. Go there and challenge them, you know, and no respect and, you know, put yourself about and take the upper hand. That's the spirit. Of course it is. And difficult places. And don't get me wrong, but we did manage to get a few victories there as well, and great.
You seen the character who'd like the challenge going in the Dragon's Den and just
love
be.
It.
I think that's you all over, isn't it?
Yeah, that was me,
he's
and that's me.
Not really intimidated, is he?
And that's me still. That's me still. It's you know, it never leaves you. You want a challenge. You want to go and improve things. You want to do well, and I think that's the way forward.
Listen, we know how competitive he is. He's as competitive at golf as he was at football.
Well, we've not played the golf yet. We've had to come in, which is brilliant for me and Mixu. Well, probably just me, actually. But we're going back out on the golf course. We're going to see, because I know these footballers are competitive and they want to win.
So McGinn plays his best golf in rain. Is that what you're saying?
He's on fire at the moment. He's on fire.
Not on fire, Mixu.
It's Johnny Cash. Honestly, he's on fire.
Please believe me. So after the fantastic time at Aberdeen, obviously the move to Bolton comes round. Yeah. How did it actually come about? Who made contact there?
It came about, this is what I've heard. Obviously didn't know, but Bruce Rioch and Colin Todd, who were the manager and assistant at Bolton at the time, came to watch our game to scout another player, not me. So then after the game, they thought that there might be something that you know would be useful for them, and that's when it came about. So very, very lucky.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know, in that respect. So, so that's how we go about it. And then obviously, the club and the agent got involved, and then came down to Bolton for talks and then joined the club. Fantastic! I was so delighted that had a chance to come to England and try play over there, and what a wonderful traditional club, Bolton. Bolton Wanderers, brilliant. So really looking forward to it, and it was a dream move.
Well, you said there, you mentioned back with Aberdeen that you played wide left. That was a tactic Bruce Rioch used on the odd occasion as well.
That's right.
And it worked really well.
Yeah, he did. He did. And I did play differently at Bolton, that wide left position, than Aberdeen. Aberdeen, I used to shout to the left back, man coming, when the full back went forward, man coming, Bolton, I had to track back. You know, it was a totally different ball game, but it was nevertheless, yes, every time I played up front and wide left, Bolton. Obviously, the injury, I was disappointed with the injury I had at Bolton the second year when we were in the Premier League. It was a hernia, but it couldn't be found. I visited so many doctors and so many scans and blah, 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 and couldn't find anything wrong. And then luckily, thankfully, Dr. Gilmore found it and then operated me. And 5 weeks after that, I was fit. But that took a big chunk.
So it took a long time to find the injury?
Find the actual injury, yes. It was so nerve-wracking and disappointing. But injuries are part and parcel of the game, and these things happen.
Let me bring you back to your debut, because I was there, Blundell Park, Grimsby Town.
Yeah.
Probably about 95 degrees.
It was.
I know, I remember.
Two goals. Yeah. Was it a 3-3 draw? I think it was.
Yeah.
One from you and two from Mixu.
Yeah, yeah. Not not the greatest of finishes, the two goals, but they ended up in the net. Assist or not from their goalkeeper, but a taker, greedy striker. But no, I was delighted, obviously. Cream debut, scoring two goals, and first of all, you know, playing, you know, getting starting 11 players in the team, and then getting a couple of goals was fantastic and really, really settled me.
Instant hint with the fans, ain't you? Straight away. I'm just going to touch on that Grimsby then. So you got you two up front, but they had is it Clive Mendonca?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, he's got a hat trick.
He was a good player in that.
Fantastic finish.
He's got a hat trick in that game.
Yeah.
Some talent good on that pitch there, wasn't there?
Good play. Absolutely.
But from Mexico's point of view, I mean, it did. It got you off to an unbelievable start with our fans. And, I mean, to this day, they adore you. They loved you. Every minute you were there, they loved you. I mean, it was like...
Nice to hear.
You know that. I mean, they were absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And the backing you had there was deserved from your point. It was deserved.
Yeah, it was a special time for me. Mm. It was a great club, great support, fantastic. Great team, we were successful. We were yo-yo team, but we were successful. We had a fantastic dressing room. But football club is nothing without fans.
No.
And, you know, Bolton Wanderers supporters, you know, tremendous. I have so fond memories from that era, that time, and it was a special time.
What's your highlight, your memories?
Player final, has to be. Player final was what a roller coaster game that was. It was unbelievable. It was more than 95 degrees that day. It was that hot May bank holiday Monday, and being 2-0 down after 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then Branny saved the penalty. I remember half time, you know, Branny's save is the sign we're coming good. Branny's save is the sign we're coming good. And just kept going. And then Owen Coyle got one back. Then De Freitas got an equaliser an extra time. And then I got one. And then De Freitas again. And then Reading bombarded our box. They bombarded the last 5-10 minutes. It was unbelievable. It was just one end all the time. And we survived, thanks to our defenders and obviously goalkeeper Branny. But what a feeling! And I don't know, John, if you remember, after dressing room after a game, and we went to the bus, and our normal seats. You know, we had our card school and all that, and we were sitting there, and we were just looking at each other and say, "Premier League next season."
In disbelief, really.
We were like that. Premier League next season, brilliant. We started talking about the stadiums we're gonna play in and all that, and it was like, wow.
We were like little boys, weren't we?
I know.
You know what I mean? You're thinking, we're gonna play here, we're gonna play there.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. It was magical. I've often, you know, that moment.
Yeah.
I've often thought about that. How brilliant moment that was, and I was gutted in one sense. I had a match with Finland on Wednesday against Denmark. It was a friendly match, but the Finland coach wanted me there. So I missed the next day parade, you know, and lifting the trophy, City Square and all that. And I so wanted to be there, but I had to fly to Finland and take part in there.
But I bet the coach journey home was brilliant, wasn't it?
We actually went back to Burnham Beaches where we were staying, the hotel. And, you know, from my point of view, I look back and I remember like Sir Nat Lofthouse being there and tears in his eyes and passing the trophy around but full of champagne and having a drink. And
brilliant.
It was just phenomenal, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a magical night. Great. The feeling. Long season. Mm. It is a long season. You know,
it was so with the season, cup runs, wasn't it?
And then the playoffs and the final, the way the final went.
I mean, it was brutal from the point of view how long it was, but take you back again, Liverpool in the Coca-Cola Cup final.
Yes.
Do you think that prepared us
helped
better?
Helped us 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I remember Bruce Rioch saying after the League Cup final against Liverpool, he said that next time we Wembley, we win. I remember that, he said. And so true. Brilliant.
What do you remember of the Liverpool game?
We didn't play to our best. We didn't play to our best. Obviously, Steve McManaman, two goals. What a fantastic, you know, his trickery and finishing skill. Fantastic, brilliant. But didn't play the way we could have played. It was, I think, hindsight, it was a little bit that if only we had Wembley experience before that game, we would have been more settled and play a normal game and be better. I was disappointed after that. Taking nothing away from Liverpool, you know, they had a fantastic team and they beat us, but our performance wasn't what we were capable of.
I would say on that day, although our performance wasn't what we were expected, yeah. I mean, our expectations were sure. high, and so obviously sure. with the boss, the bar was high. But on that day, I felt the difference was McManaman.
Yeah, sure.
Because take him out of their team, there wasn't anything really between the teams.
Yeah.
Tom had a fantastic day that day.
Yeah, I know.
What a goal he scored.
Great goal. Fantastic strike.
Going to bring you back. The semi-final against Swindon Town. This is my best memory of you. Worst pitch in the league at that stage. Would you agree before we go any further?
100%.
Didn't start. So you might be angry. Disappointed.
Disappointed.
Come on.
Happens.
Come on. We needed a goal.
Badly needed a goal.
Yeah.
I think Fjortov scored for them, didn't he?
Fjortov scored in the second half off a corner. And if I describe this, you and Richard Snakes come on at the same time,
mm-hmm.
changed the game.
Lifted the crowd.
Without doubt. Lifted the crowd. We were in a bit of a lull at that point. Game had gone flat. You came on. It wasn't quite, I don't think, the first touch of the ball, but it was very mm-hmm. close to being the first yes. touch of the ball. You've hit that sweet as a nut.
I know.
25, 30 yards.
There's a little bit behind that. People don't know. I was never a great striker of the ball. My goals were a lot of headers, inside the box, finishes, and stuff like that. Never long range shots like that. And during that season, on our days off, I used to go in that wee gym, wooden floor gym, behind the stand.
I know you mean.
Yes.
I know you mean. I used to still go there to this day.
Is it? I used to go there and hit it against the wall, both feet, and hit it and get the feel when I really ping it. And because I wanted to develop and improve on that aspect. And I was always, you know, feeling it a bit like golf. You know, you feel it when you nail it. Yeah, same. And then when that ball landed in that mud over there, Burton Park during the game, and I hit it, the same feeling came to my mind. And that gem came to my mind. And as soon as it left my foot, I knew it. It was sweet as a nut. Boom. And it went there. Sorry. And then, it was a great feeling. And then seeing the ball going in there, I was like, wow.
Rocketed in.
Brilliant.
Top corner complete, wasn't it?
But to pick it as clean off that mud. That was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I played my best games in the mud.
What a goal.
Yeah, beautiful. And then after that, we ran the show. We were all over them.
Absolutely.
Then
game turned on its head.
Yes.
And that was it then.
Yes.
It was meant to be.
It was a
great place to play football under the lights, wasn't it, Burnham Park?
It was. Great atmosphere.
Yeah.
It wasn't the prettiest. And the supermarket one end and all that, and you know, the modern day stadiums. But it was a fan that it was our home. You know, the dressing room were not luxurious. And we blah blah blah. But it was our home. It was a difficult place to come. You know, all the visiting teams. I don't think they say that, oh, it's an easy place to go to. Thanks to the fans. I remember that the opposite to the main stand, that, you know, the sea of people there.
Burnton Terrace.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Fantastic. I really enjoyed, you know, playing there.
Who were the characters in the team?
No, McGinn, 100%. Tomo, Jason McAteer, Didze. So many.
Coily,
absolutely. You know, 100%. There's so many. So many. And strong characters. You know, even Patterson.
Yeah.
You know, always talking, always his opinion, always, you know, like that. And, you know, they're usual. And
so good to go work every day training with them.
And it was a fantastic mix, you know, with the chatterboxes and with the weird foreigners and stuff like that. No, I mean it. But we were all together. And I remember the at the training ground, Bruce Rioch forced everybody to come day off on Sunday to the open day, to the training ground. And he said, bring your missus, bring your children, bring your grandmother if you want, bring your auntie if you want, an uncle if you want. Everybody's welcomed. I remember first family day, like that. Everybody, you know, looks and, you know, like that. The wives are looking, oh, Gucci, okay, nice, blah, blah, blah. And then nobody really talking. Second one, more talking. The third one, even more talking. Then when we were playing, the wives started to organize, where do we go, which restaurant do we go for a meal after, you know, we organize babysitters and that. It was so close bunch. It was fantastic and so enjoyable.
Do you know it's still running to this day now? And it was Bruce who started it.
Brilliant.
We just had it on Monday.
Brilliant. I like that. I like that a lot.
Creating a culture within the club.
And involve wives.
Exactly.
Families.
Because if you're not happy as a player,
yeah,
the wife has to be happy or else you're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
But it's a family.
Yeah. It certainly boosted our team spirit. Mm. That's for sure.
But that bus was brilliant, wasn't it? Well, what a crack you used to have on the bus, especially get a result and everything else. But it was... Yeah. Good.
Yeah, playing hearts, you know, the card school.
Card school, great. Hearts, and yeah. You know. And you were involved.
I was.
You had to bide your time, like, but you got an invite.
Absolutely, you have to. You have to wait for opportunity.
Moved on again, a short spell at Wolverhampton Wanderers and then to Hibernian, where I think you had a great playing career there, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't have a great time at Wolves. I didn't play regularly. Mark McGee, he changed the team quite a lot, and I was quite a lot out and used as a sub. And it was difficult period. And then eventually you start, you know, wanting to go elsewhere. And then the Hibs came in. Alec McLeish was the Hibs manager, and he. He wanted me to join Hibs, and then it happened. Hibs were in the first division.
That's right. Yeah.
Not in the Scottish Premier League at the time, but I knew how big club Hibernian is and was and I remember the first match against St Mirren, Love Street, away, and we were hopeless. We lost 2-0. We were so bad that day, and I remember McLeish coming to me after the match and said that the big man will play better than that, don't worry, and all that. Yeah, we didn't perform at all. But then once we got really going, we ended up winning the league by 27 points, something like that, 25 points. I can't remember exactly, but used to comfortably.
Great place to play though, Easter Road.
Yes.
Great old stadium. I know it's like modernised now, but it's... proper stadium on top of you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is now modernised, but it used to have the slope, yeah. East Road, it was good, and like I said, once we got going, and that was the time when McLeish and the club, of course, started to bring in players for the future. Frank Sousseas, Russell Latapis, I was recruited, and others as well. For the next season, and then our first season in the Premier League, we went to the Scottish Cup final and got third position in the league. So it was good for the promoted side.
We've got a great Facebook page. We've got a question here from Murray. He says, "Can you ask Big Mixu what were Frank Soucy like?"
Big Frankie was, or still is, I believe, unbelievable character. Quiet. Which may come as a surprise, you know, a player who was a captain of France, who was, you know, won the European Cup with Marseille, played in Italy years, Atalanta, and all the success. But what a player. He was towards his last years in his career, and he knew that. He knew how to look after his body and save his body during the week, so he's ready for the Saturday. And we're talking about my mentality and all that, and Alec McLeish used to have five sides end of the training session most of the days, and then one day I was with the same side as Frankie, and you know, in five sides, if all five players, if they don't put it in, you know, your man short, and it shows in 5v5 or 4v5 then, and I lost it. I went to Frankie, come on Frankie, come on, you know, start playing, start running about and blah blah blah, come on, you know, we're losing matches, and come on, any chance? He didn't say anything, and I was fuming. And then he came to me in the showers, and he said, Mixu, I am 35 years of age. Main day for me is Saturday, not Thursday, Saturday. Saturday I play. And to be fair, he played on Saturdays. He was fantastic on Saturdays. But during the week, he knew it. And then we started to respect that as well, because on Saturdays he was on fire. He was brilliant for us, playing as a centre half or sitting midfielder, you know, or sometimes almost like a sweeper. It was tremendous.
I think, but senior players back in the day, they know how to handle the body. Like Paul McGrath, he never used to train, didn't he? Just Saturday with her, wasn't he?
Just going to say, though, that's good management, though, yes. Because the manager recognises and understands the fact that you can't run the batteries down during the week. You need everything ready for Saturday, and you've got to trust the player to know what he needs to do.
And my experience, Alec McLeish was the best men manager I've had.
Yeah?
I've had.
That's brilliant. Yeah?
Brilliant. Understands the player, the player's mentality. You know, gives the player a leeway like that. Or, you know, demands him more, you know, in the right place. Really good man manager.
Do you think that was a case because he wasn't long finished himself as a player?
Possibly.
So he was still connected.
Also an intelligent man.
An intelligent, yeah.
Yes. Know how to handle people, how to, you know, and then knowing the character, you know, the personality of the player. You know, he knew that, no, he doesn't get away with it, he need to demand more. Or he's fine, okay. Right. So, really good in that.
Learn a bit from him,
yes,
that way?
Yes, absolutely.
Later on, for your manager? Or
absolutely, career. Yes. So, learn from every manager.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it never stops. Learning never stops.
What did you take off Bruce?
I took, I think he was high in discipline. His first words when he came to the club, I can be your best pal or worst enemy. And it says it all. High in discipline. Tactical side kept it simple, but good. You know, really clear. Everybody knew exactly what to do, I think that's why we got success under his management. Really, really good. Respect him, you know, tremendously.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Really, really good. And also a little bit man management, you know. Once you spoke to him one-to-one, there was a human side, but he was more of a old-school type. He was like a, it was changing those days, you know. But when you spoke to him one against one, then he was softer. But in front of the team and all that, he was hard as nails and discipline and all that. And obviously, we were successful, and we had good players as well. And when you're successful, when you're winning matches, you know, everything is good. So,
Edinburgh Derby, letting off your own dingers, didn't you?
Yeah, it's a special moment, special day, special night. Obviously, they always are. We touched that with the derbies already, Dundee derbies and stuff like that. But that was a great night. We did have a good team, and we won more against Hearts than we lost during that spell, McLeish spell. I remember Millennium Derby at Tynecastle. We beat them 3-0. That was great. That was the year we had been promoted to there. And then the 6-2 match obviously was amazing. How Hearts started 1-0 ahead, and then we managed to get a couple of goals before the half time, and 2-1 up half time. I remember McLeish saying that don't start defending the league now, go for it, and don't sit back and wait, because you know Hearts team is well capable of beating us. So second half we just ran all over them. You know, whenever we got the ball, it was like a wave and, you know, chances and great night.
Bag three yourself, hat-trick, cult hero then, finished.
Against my good mate as well, Antti Niemi, who was in Hearts Cole.
Of course, yeah.
We were roommates for the national team 10 years. Wow. Roommates. I remember after the match, I had the ball with me, and Antti came to me and said, "Fuck's sake, how many did you score?"
So it was a blur for him.
Yeah. But it was funny. And that night didn't go out. But Antti's family came to our house for a dinner and a couple of drinks, and. He was a little bit quiet first hour, but once after a couple of beers, you know, he softened up.
Did you ever get, I mean, just thinking there off the top of my head, being good friends with him and him being Hearts, you being Hibs, did you ever get any stick for socialising together in the city or whatever?
No.
No?
No. No.
Not like Celtic and Rangers then?
No, it's not. It's not that bad in Edinburgh clubs. Right. No, we never got stick. And we were out for meals and stuff like that, and people saw us together and all that, no problem, you know. And come the match day, you know, you want to beat your mate.
You said before Russell Lafferty, what a player he was, box of tricks. But you told us a great story about him, didn't you? When he went off to play for Trinidad.
Yeah. It's, what a character, what a live wire.
Fun to be with.
Both on and off the pitch, good to be with. And we had reached the Scottish Cup final, and there was an international matches. And then Russell went to play for Trinidad and Tobago and didn't come back. Us, you know, we all came back as agreed the next day or day after that. And then, no, Russell. Everybody was, it's the wee man. Where is he? And nobody knew. And I was good pals with him. And, Mixu, have you heard what a wee man? No. Nothing, not a whisper. And then he came 2 weeks late. Came back 2 weeks late.
Just turned up?
Just turned up. Nobody could contact him. Nobody. So he comes back. And he comes back like nothing. And I said, I went to him, where you been? You know, everybody's been, and all that. It's got this cup final coming up. And he said, Mixer. It was a carnival time in Tobago. I couldn't come back. I was playing drums in the band, in the carnival. You know, and I thought, but
you could have laughed, right? Now.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think that the club and the manager was laughing, so he didn't play in the cup final. And
then, player though, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was we were handicapped because he didn't play. But he was a character and a half, character. Nice guy, great guy.
How did you end up at Strasbourg?
That was thanks to my teammate, David Zitelli, who joined us from France. And he had he's from Strasbourg. He had a long playing career there. And then the sporting director of Strasbourg contacted David Zitelli and asked him that, would you know in UK, Scotland, perhaps, a centre-forward? They were in need, centre-forward. And he recommended me. And then that spell, the 6-2 match was that spell. He saw that game on TV in France and a couple of other ones as well. And I ended up there. So that was great.
What was that like? As a culture, as a changing rooms?
It was, footballing-wise, it taught me a lot. We had a fantastic head coach, Ivan Hasek, a Czech coach and very good coach, good tactician. Good training, good feedback after matches, everything spot on. Footballing wise, it was great, but France is totally different to UK. It's not as relaxed, although the club wanted the dressing room to be more relaxed and all that, but difficult, very difficult.
Not the same changing rooms as Aberdeen, Dundee, Bolton and Hibs.
Because of the tradition, yeah. Yeah, before the matches, the dressing room in UK is bouncing, you know, and you're like, come on, let's go for it, you know, come on, music, you know, jukebox is you know, pumping and all that, and in France, everybody's sitting like that, and you know, all that, and I had used to going through the teammates, come on, let's do this, and come on, and you know, and blah, 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 and they were like, you know.
We'll see you on.
So, different culture, but footballing-wise, training-wise, learned so much over there, and it was good. Although I had a long-term injury with my ankle there, and it was operated and all that. But and then after season, you know, came back to Scotland. But it was good. I learned a lot my Strasbourg days, and taken a lot to my management days. Coaching days, from that, you know, how to live, how to train, how to recover, how to do injury prevention, blah blah blah, all aspects and everything. Really good there, and tactic wise as well. It's very tactical game over there.
Had you started your coaching badges by that time?
I started my coaching badges when I was at Wolves.
Okay.
Yes, I did my B license in England, and in Manchester, and then. The Cliff, the Man United training ground, yes, yeah, over there. You have a B license over there, then A license was after France, so I had my B license already. So
you came back from Strasbourg and with no club.
Yeah, there was no club. We decided to locate us back to Edinburgh, back in Edinburgh, and came to Edinburgh and no club. In the darkness, really. Pre-season was starting. I was keeping myself fit, running the Arthur Street because we stayed in Newtown, city centre of Edinburgh. And then I saw Bobby Williamson and the coaching staff, the new coaching staff of Hibs, over there, because the young boys had started a couple of days earlier than the first team training. So they were there looking at the youngsters training. And then I went to say good luck to them, new management team and all that. And Bobby asked me that, what are you doing yourself? And I said, no club, just keeping myself fit and all that. He said, why don't you come and train with us? And much better doing the pre-season and training with a bunch of boys than yourself. I said, well, wonderful. Great, I would love to. So I joined the training. A lot of boys I knew because I had played for Hibs, you know, a year before. So, and then 2, 3, 4 days after, Bobby pulled me and said that we would like you to talk to Mr. Petrie, the chairman, about the contract and ended up back at Hibs. It was great.
Good feeling then. You go back to something you know and a bonus, really.
Wonderful, and Hibs fans are tremendous, you know, and we had fond memories from the 6-2 matches and the way we played and all that, although that was history, you know, can't look too much back, but it was all positive. Yeah. It was all positive, and all surroundings that were not new to me, so it was great.
So after Strasbourg, back to Hibernian. Short stint at St. Johnson, St. Mirren. And where I'm buzzing, Cowden Beef.
Yes, the mighty Blue Brazil.
That was one of my questions.
Brilliant.
Where the name come from?
Blue Brazil.
Yeah.
Because the team plays like Brazil. Hey, very simple.
It's just brilliant name.
Very simple.
I've never heard of that. And when doing the research last night, I was laughing my head off. This is quality.
And the shirt is blue, so it's a Blue Brazil. Yeah, it was... After Hibs, obviously, I went to St. Johnston. Billy Stark was a manager, and I went as an assistant manager and player assistant manager. Learned a lot from Billy Stark, fantastic manager, great person, brilliant. And then after that, St. Mirren, first team coach, took the reserves. Then I ended up taking the youth team as well. And it was a busy year, playing first team, coaching reserves, coaching youth team, and all that. So that was a great year.
Did it affect your football, doing all the coaching as well as playing?
No, I just stayed in the afternoon and coached then and had sessions. But my knee went in one of the matches, big chunk of cartilage between the bones, my knee came out, and that was it, that finished me. Tried to operate it, and that was it. But then Cowden Beath contacted me and wanted to join. Wanted me to join them and ended up there. And I was a little bit hesitant beginning with because it was a part-time club. Right. I had never been part-time player apart from Finland, which was more or less full-time anyway. And then I thought I need to ask some help here. So I phoned Craig Levine, who had started his coaching career at Cowden Beath, and then he went on to Hearts, and then Scotland, you know. And Craig said that, because I wanted to ask about the club and the chairman and all that, and environment there. He said that the club is brilliant. Chairman is brand new. He'll do anything for you. If you give your all to the club and to the team, chairman always backs you. And that's what that was the case. Stuart McDougall, what a wonderful person, what a wonderful chairman. And then I phoned Alec McLeish. I said, Alec, I asked Alec that it was a third division, lowest.
So you're at the bottom of the pyramid?
Yes, lowest tier in Scotland. And I said, should I wait for the first division side or something like that? You know, as a first. I said, Mixel, if you think the club is good and you trust yourself, do it. And if you're good enough, then you'll get the opportunities to climb the ladder. And I said, fair enough, I believe in myself and all that, and joined them. And luckily we had a great season. We won the division and got the promotion. And then in the second division next season, I think we were second, and then the Finnish club, TPS, got in touch and joined them in Finland.
I'm going to take you back though. So a part-time role, is that the players what part-time? So
yes.
They work during the day?
I was full-time.
Right. So What were you doing when you were full-time, when the players weren't there? Were you after a bit of everything, what needed to be done, or was it just
managing? I was analysing our match. I was analysing the next opponent. In those days, it was phone calls to the managers who had just played them. You know, my friends and not always friends, and helping each other. And that sort of stuff. And then we created this, we had a lot of young players. And then I took my brother, Marcus, he played for us. He didn't work. He lived in our house and played. That was the plan. And we trained every day, Marcus and I. His positional skills and, you know, stuff like that. And then I thought that, I'm training with Marcus every day. Why don't I ask? I brought from Barnet, I brought Morgado Gomez to Garden Beath. And there were a few players who were unemployed, there were a few students and stuff like that. Some players who worked in shifts. They were all able to come training in the mornings. So we started training in the mornings with a group of players. And it was all positional training. It wasn't team tactics or anything like that. It was all positional skills and improve them as for their positions, you know, what we wanted to do on during the weekends. So he worked a treat. It was really good. And then it was funny as well. It was a part-time club. The kid man, obviously part-time. And he had holidays. More than the queen. And he was on holiday all the time. So who was the kid man when he went on holiday? It was me. I was doing the laundry, you know, after the games, after the matches, I put the dirty stuff in the bath, a lot of powder. Then let it in the soak in hot water. Next morning, washing machine, dryer, blah, 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 fold it in the cupboard and all that, and pumping the balls in the right pressure. And I remember training ground. We didn't have a training ground. Of course not. And during the winter months, there was no light. There was no light. So I said to the chairman, how can we tackle that problem? We need the players at the lights. So
team going well then, as well?
Eh?
The team going well?
Absolutely. We were flying. Doing really well. And then he said that he's got a solution. So we hired four of those motorway lights that you get up.
And on you, a jack.
You lit, yes.
Yeah.
And you lit. And I put them in the corner of the area where we trained, you know, the lights. It was like a stadium. And then I put goals there and nets, you know, and all that, and all the drills and all the markers and stuff like that. I remember the goals were the type of goals that you had to screw them in, you know, the nuts, you know, the posts and the stanchions and the crossbar, all you know, screwing in. And I remember carrying them crossbars and blah, blah, blah onto the training ground from the container. I said, oh, one of these days, you know, I'm at the club that I just walk to the training ground, I just whistle and training starts. And it took me 2.5 hours to set up the training.
It sounds like a good grounding for you, for learning your skills, isn't it?
It was brilliant. I loved that period. I look back now, oh, it was tremendous. Those days, you know, it was hard work, but it was great. And then boys responded. One guy, because they were obviously working during the day. And then one guy came to me one dark evening. He comes to me, Kaffa, you're killing us. You're absolutely killing us. We're working all day and we're knackered after day's work. And then we come here and there's lights up, there's nets bulking, they're waiting for us and everything is ready. You're killing us. We get such a buzz, you know, to get out there. And so it worked. It was great.
You can tell the way you're talking, fondness for it.
Oh, it was great.
Well, I am going to say, what was the chairman called again?
Stuart McDougall.
Did he own an old coach and he was your coach driver
as
well?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
He's a one-man club.
He had bought old Leicester City bus. Right. I mean, 10 years ago. Before that, maybe 20 years ago. And, it was luxurious. There was curtains, there was plastic flowers and all that, and blah, 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 and all that. If the bus broke down, he would fix it. He would go down there and fix it, because he was a mechanic. And he was the Garden Beath, the stadium, Central Park, there's a stock car racing around it. And he was part of that as well. And it was a man of many talents. If the light bulb went under the lights, the stadium lights, he would climb up and change that bulb. He was fantastic. It was unbelievable.
A down-to-earth grounded chairman.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant. Really respect that.
I've got to ask him, did it ever break down, the coach?
Not our time, but I heard stories that he had. He had broke down, but not during our time there. So
you can just see him, though, Jack Rack. Bulb's gone, I'll do it, and he's just gone.
I know. He puts all in one on, you know.
Blue all in one. Yeah. Oh, like Fred Dibner.
But probably from your point of view, a great chairman for your first managerial job.
So lucky.
Yeah.
So lucky. Absolutely. And the way he supported, and I remember Morgado Gomez coming to us, and what a player he was for us. Tremendous. And we played a friendly game pre-season against Dunfermline. And he ran the show in the midfield. He was tremendous. So quickly after, I said, Morgar, right, quick shower in my room. And then I said to Morgar, wait here. I went to the chairman's office, the next door. I said, Chairman, that player, Morgado Gomez, is not leaving this ground until he signed the contract. So let's make sure of that. And that's what happened. It was pretty.
And I imagine the budget was really tight.
Oh.
But you just found a player there. I'd imagine the chairman would just go a little bit more to make sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. He was
probably his own pocket.
Yeah, possibly. He was able to do that, and he did that.
Yeah.
And what a great packing, you know. Really good.
So you left Cowden Beef, went back home?
Went to TPS, yeah. It was a club that had underachieved previous 15, 20 years. Used to be, you know, top end of Finnish top division, I was contacted to join, and then ended up there. It was a good timing because I was able to see the end of the season in Finland, see the players, see the team, and then bring in the players I wanted for that club, for that team. Do the pre-season, and Finnish pre-season is long because it's summer football. So it's basically half a year. Of course, they rest, players rest as well, but it's basically half a year. So you can get the players really fit. You can get the players tactically ready and all that. And we worked hard that pre-season, and we did well. We were third in the league and qualified for the then Intertoto UEFA competition, and great. And after that season, then Hibs contacted the club and asking permission to speak to me. And as soon as I heard that, you know, there's only one address I wanted to go to was Easter Road. But all in all, we had a fantastic season in Finland, and I'm very thankful. And
did Hibs have to pay a compensation fee for you?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they did. I don't know if it's been announced, but they did pay a compensation, and the Finnish club was okay with that, because there was when I heard that Hibs asked permission to speak to me and they were reluctant, then I spoke to the owner and the managing director, and I said that then no, I'm going, I'm talking to them, you know, give permission. That's me, you know, blah, blah, blah. So belay the ball, which was a little bit strong, but, you know, that was a great opportunity for me as a manager coming back to Scotland. And Hibs had been playing a couple of occasions, and good club.
But with you being so strong, they knew what it meant to you.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
And also from your point of view, I'd imagine the fact that they're paying a compensation fee shows you how much they want you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and everything went... I was strong in the beginning because I really wanted to give it a chance. Mm-hmm. It wasn't done deal. I gave it a chance, and then they understood that, and everything went okay. So it was, very amicable in the end. So that was good. Actually, the managing director then later worked at the Finnish FA, and I joined him again. So, it was good.
The Edinburgh Derby.
Yes.
What was it best, winning as a player or a manager?
Good question. I'm a greedy striker. I say both.
But it's different pressures, isn't it? Is it relief?
It's when you're a player, of course, your teammates and all that, but you are still individual. You're still individual. When you're a manager, you're in charge of the whole orchestra, the whole thing. So it's difficult. It's difficult to answer that. Of course, as a manager, you know that you've come up with the tactics. You've come up with the players selected for that game and all that. You have a much, much bigger responsibility. When you're a player, you look after your position and yourself, and you dominate your area. That's your responsibility. So it is difficult. But then you have your teammates around you, and you love your teammates, and together, you know, you win and lose together. And it's difficult to answer that.
So you're going to sit on the fence or answer it?
I have to sit on the fence.
From
your point of view, Mixu, I mean, it's two different feelings, number one, because as a manager, I'd imagine the pressure that week of the derby is immense.
Yes.
You know what rides on it. You know the responsibility that goes with it. And, you know, once you get the game over with, you've won it, the elation, pressure's off then for a good week, isn't it? Because everybody's bouncing, everybody's happy, you've done your job. Mm-hmm. But you're on your own. Whereas as a player,
That's right.
You come off the park after the final whistle goes, you might get a little bit of stick, but then it disappears. Mm-hmm. But as a manager, you carry the lot 24/7, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other way around. If you get beat, you know, as a manager, you get stick month after that.
Yeah.
You know, you lost that Edinburgh Derby. Come on, that's the most important match.
Then that's the responsibility that
Yes, it is. It's totally different.
Yes, it isn't our question. I'm going to take that back, sitting on the fence, because as a player, you probably could celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
As a manager, you'd be like...
Yes. You put it right. You're relieved.
Relief.
You won the game. So, of course, you are happy as Larry. But you're like, oh,
drained,
thankfully, right? come on. Thankfully. You know, brilliant. That great feeling. But as a player, you are like, yeah, you know, it's one of them.
Yeah. So let's finish on Finland, because you were there for a few years. I listened to a story last night and I thought it was great how you told it. Spain away, World Cup champions, weren't they? Or European Cup winners at the time.
Yeah. we were in the same World Cup group when I was a Finland manager, and with Spain. And they were the current European and world champions.
Best team in the world.
You know, you remember the Spain team?
Yeah, of course.
You know, the fantastic team. The football they played. You know, fantastic. Great to watch. Not too great to play against. And then we played in Gijón, away. And we managed to get a 1-1 draw against them. And obviously, totally against odds. I think the position was something like 79-21. We basically say that counter-attacking is our game, and that's it, and we'll defend in an organized manner, and we set up tactics and trained a lot and all that, and prepared well for that match, as always. But it was a different tactics, because when I was a Finland manager, I wanted to play attacking football. I wanted to play a passing football and really... and overload the certain areas and make sure that we have passing options and attack and create goal-scoring opportunities through that. So, but against Spain, you know, we took the spoon, put the spoon in the mouth, you know.
Not going to work them tactics here,
humble manner, no, because you get beat 7-0. So we were a tight unit, block, low block, and we had a clear plan, counter-attacking and all that. And it worked a treat.
As a manager, while it's working, are you like thinking,
oh,
this is working, this is working? Because it's all
loving.
It's a chess game for you, though, are you explaining it, isn't it?
And I'm even shouting to the boys, you know, and the boys are feeling it. You know, players are feeling it, whether tactics are working or not. 100% straight away, they know it. And I'm even shouting to the boys, it's working. In Finnish, of course. It's working. Come on, keep the same. It's working. Keep it up. And then they never score. They never score. Then they score from the bloody corner kick. Spain. Full of midgets. Hey. Hey. They score. Okay. It was Ramos. It was Erge Ramos.
The tallest player of the year.
And fantastic in the air. Very aggressive. Jumps well and all that. Bloody scored. And I was like, no. Corner kick. And then... as soon as that happened, I changed the formation to more positive 4-4-1-1. And we knew that the Spain would attack, leaving only one player at the back. The other central defender pushes forward beside Busquets. And so they have two there all the time. But on a halfway line, there's only one player. So I put our fastest player against him. And I knew that he's faster than. I knew it. And I told the boys, halftime, right, you get the ball, never mind beautiful passing football. Make sure we get ball, you know, on their half the pitch, and you run, and blah, 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 hit them on the counter. One against one. And then we got a goal from the counter-attack, and it wasn't as simple counter-attack like that. It was more passes. It was a good goal. Teemu Pukki actually scored the goal. And he's ideal for the counter-attacks. And then as soon as we scored the one each goal from that counter-attack, back to the low block, and, you know, being like a Spartans together, and, you know, come on, and try and poke them, you know, behind our shield. But it was a great feeling after the match. Although it was only a draw, but it was a draw. It was fantastic against a great team.
Best team in the world.
At that time, yeah.
That's unbelievable, that. Also, but last night when I was doing my research, the rematch.
Yes.
You went opposite, didn't you?
Yes. Then, obviously, the rematch, the second match that was in Helsinki, Olympic Stadium. And I thought that let's be a little bit more adventurous. Let's not be so, you know, Spartans. And opened a little bit, and that cost us. We lost it 2-0. That cost us. The left back scored the goal, and it was a great move from Spain. And they got behind, and he scored, and 1-0 goal. But it was, you know, you open a little bit, and they find the holes. They find the holes and all that. But you try. On the other hand, I was hoping that we would score that first goal and then perhaps, you know, go a little bit more of a block and make it hard for them. But unfortunately, they scored the first goal.
It's a proper chess game, football manager, it is. Isn't it? You know, more I'm learning now behind.
But also from the fact that you know yourself in your head, if they get their noses in front, difficult. Very difficult.
And that's why I was so disappointed in Spain, in Gijón. I was so disappointed because... they scored from the corner kick. I would understand if they played that, you know, tum 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 combination and top locker. I would understand. I was like, good. That's why you're world champions. Bloody corner kick. I was like, no.
You can laugh about it now, though. It's comical now, isn't it?
Yes.
It's brilliant. But again, for you, your feeling, playing the best team and your tactics are just working a treat. It's got to be a great feeling.
It is a great feeling, but obviously players... players execute them and all that. It's a team effort and all that. But great feeling together afterwards.
We're coming to an end now before we get John's rapid 15, but I want to go for career highlight.
Career highlight.
As a player?
Definitely play a final, Bolton-Reading. Reading-Bolton, which way it is. Definitely that. Edinburgh Derby, 6-2 hat-trick, is one of them. Scoring 4 goals in the qualifier for Finland, has to be up there as well.
As a manager?
Very lucky. As a manager, career highlight. what would be the most, the best? Difficult to say.
So now I question this. Actually, we get these on the Facebook groups, and it is
difficult to say.
Moments because, are all special, different reasons, aren't they?
And because some jobs are not winning the title, you know, but everything goes like the match against Spain. On the other hand, you know, winning Edinburgh Derby, winning the league, qualifying for Europe, you know, they are all great, you know, and you feel they are special, all of them. How to rank them, you know, and which is the best? It's very tough.
Yeah,
they're like different, you know.
I'm going to ask these questions.
And I suppose sometimes you feel it's disrespectful as well because you've had such great moments at all the clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You put it well. But also, I must say that it is a very, very, very proud moment when you are managing your own country, the first game. You know, especially being a player, you know, and before, and then being the manager and giving that chance, opportunity. And you know, to know that you are the head coach of your own country, national team, it's a special moment. And a tear came to my eye when I was captain in Finland against France, Olympic Stadium, and because I remembered my father playing for Finland, and I was a young kid, Olympic Stadium, you know, the national anthems and all that, everybody singing. You know, great moment. Then at school, primary school, every Monday morning, the headmaster gave us a story of some sort that we should learn. And after that, it was the national anthem through the tunnel at every class. And we used to stand. And I used to always dream that one day I'm standing in Olympic Stadium like my father's play. One day I'm standing there like him. And I remember when I was a captain of Finland first time, Olympic Stadium, a tear came to my eyes. So emotional. It was unbelievable. And I said to myself, come on, wake up. You're supposed to be there, come on, you know, and all that. And you're crying like a baby there. See what I mean?
Emotional tears.
But it's amazing how it hits you and how you feel.
I'm welling up now, having them all, just thinking the boy.
It's great.
Your dream.
It's great. And when I was standing there myself, you know, that leader. My father was a captain of Finland as well, and it was like, oh, this is unbelievable.
It is.
It's special moments.
Mm.
Never mind playing the game, but those moments, oh, priceless.
I don't think we can get better in that, but I think. Come on, John.
I was just going to say, now, listen, absolutely wonderful playing career, fantastic managerial career. What are you up to now?
At the moment, not managing a team or involved in daily, working for UEFA at the moment as a technical observer. Basically, Champions League, Europa League, some Conference League, UEFA competitions, coded the match, analysed the match, how the both teams attack, defend, transitions, set plays, how the goals are scored, why are the goals scored. Coaching decisions, change of formations, change of individual player roles, you name it. A lot of details. Enjoy that, because going to these top matches and seeing the trends developing, oh, I saw that in that game, you know, blah, 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 that's how the football is moving towards. And it keeps me thinking as well. And better prepared for the next job. So, whenever get an opportunity, next job, then we go again. But in the meanwhile, do the UEFA stuff and keep educating myself.
Well, the one thing I would say is, Mixu, listen, I've played with you as a player. You've not lost one ounce of your passion. You haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's evident. You're absolutely unbelievable. And as a manager, the passion there, you need to be back in football and quick, because if you're not in football, then missing out. Because your passion comes across fantastically well. It really does. And I'd imagine the job you're doing now with UEFA is going to help you in the long run and further down the line, because it's keeping the trends, it's seeing what's happening, and they're going to benefit now the next job that you go into.
Yeah, of course, of course. You can always take it exactly from the top football to somewhere. But you make your, you know, you know what you're aiming, and you make your own. And that's what it's all about.
Like you said earlier on, you're taking little bits from managers, you're taking little bits from games. It's absolutely the same thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what a better position as analysing these top matches.
Talking of games, John, before we do your Rapid 15, there's a big game coming on in the next hour, isn't there?
There is. Very, very big game.
Is there going to be competitiveness between you two, or are you going to be teammates?
I think we'll be competitive in our own right, I would say.
Absolutely.
But with respect to the other as well.
Come
when
on,
when he beats me.
I would say that come on the lefties, and especially the foreign lefties.
I hope I'm class as a foreigner.
You are somewhere.
Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods.
The Open or the Masters?
Masters.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Best game attended?
Champions League final. World Cup final.
First result you look for on a Saturday?
Bolton.
Favourite golfing holiday destination?
Portugal.
Favourite golf course played?
Old Course, St Andrews.
Best golfing footballer?
I would say Marco van Basten.
Boom, drop that name. Sure.
Mike dropped that, is it?
Well, it took a long time. Yeah.
Hampden Park or Wembley?
Wembley.
Ronaldo or Messi?
Messi.
Links or Parkland Golf?
Links.
Best player managed?
Roman Yeremenko.
Hole in one?
One.
Old or new Wembley?
Old.
Ryder Cup or the Open?
Ryder Cup.
Brilliant. Mixu Patalainen, you have been an absolute gentleman. What a
class man.
Class.
Can I ask you one question? This is Liam's one question. Tannadice, Easter Road, Burnham Park.
Oh. All of them.
Yeah, that's a nasty question. Nasty question. Honestly, Mixu, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time, Mixu. You've
thank
been
you,
nothing but
gentlemen.
Champion.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.